This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
The flood. We have major flooding happening at this hour in and around Calgary. From Camor to Coleman, communities are battling rising waters.
In Canada, an extreme rainfall event, made worse by a stalled weather system, probably powered by an unstable Arctic and climate change, has closed down the country's oil trading capital. In Calgary, nature accomplished what politics could not. The largest oil company headquarters, including Suncor Energy, Imperial Oil, and Shell, saw their head offices closed as downtown Calgary was evacuated and left without power for days. Trading in Canadian crude oil stopped. Alberta towns more than 100 years old were evacuated, flooded, and wrecked. At least 75,000 people in the major oil trading capital of Calgary were ordered out of their homes. Most of them do not have any flood insurance. Billions of dollars of damage to homes, businesses, roads, bridges, and all kinds of infrastructure occurred. The Trans-Canada Highway connecting to the West Coast was shut down for days. The oil promoter-in-chief, Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, flew to his hometown of Calgary, clearly shocked that climate change could affect Alberta itself. Sure, some South Pacific islands may flood, but Alberta? I've seen a little bit of flooding in Calgary before, he said. I don't think any of us have seen anything like this. Perhaps if Harper had not shut down climate research facilities, particularly in the Arctic, and muzzled Canadian climate scientists, he might have heard about research from Rutgers University showing jet stream patterns were stalling due to melting Arctic ice and climate change. The premier of the Canadian province of Alberta, Alison Redford, flew back from New York, where she was promoting the Keystone XL pipeline to ship polluting tar sands oil to the United States. She, too, was shocked, I tell you, at the devastation. Who could have guessed an overheated atmosphere could hold so much water? Canadian television anchors and reporters were unable to utter the words climate change or extreme precipitation event, this even as similar floods hit Europe and India. The CTV network reported the strange blocking high, heating eastern Canada with summer while keeping a swirl of storms and extreme rain in the west. The stalled jet stream appeared on the map without any explanation. I'm Alex Smith. This is Radio EcoShock, telling it like it is. Later we'll hear one brief radio clip, the only major media report I can find anywhere, telling Canadians the real cause of the weird weather that strikes again and again now as the new normal. But first, let's get back to basic solutions for right living. Those are the answers. We'll start with my interview with one of North America's pioneers of a brand new method of clean food production, food you'll want to eat, and it's called aquaponics. It has just arrived in North America. I predict within 10 years you will be buying organic local produce and fresh fish from neighborhood fish and veggie operations, or maybe you will grow it all yourself in your own backyard. Sylvia Bernstein, author of Aquaponic Gardening, tells us how. This is Radio EcoShock. We're in our mobile studio at the Mother Earth News Fair in Puyallup, Washington. And our guest is Sylvia Bernstein. She is a leader, and I think I can say an expert, on aquaponic gardening, and that is growing fish and plants together, although there's a lot of things we have to explore to find out what aquaponics really means. I'm particularly interested in it, as you'll find out. Let's welcome Sylvia to the program.
Thank you for having me here.
Okay, so we've got a bunch of people, they don't really know what aquaponics is. How would you explain it to them?
The short answer is that it's an ecosystem that's developed by combining hydroponics, or soilless gardening, with aquaculture, or growing fish in captivity. And so you join those two together, bacteria being the joining force between the two, and you come up with aquaponics. So it's a completely organic, highly sustainable, low-water way of growing both fish and plants.
Well, you know, it might interest you that my wife worked with the Great Bear Rainforest Campaign in British Columbia, and one of the things that they found out was that the fish, the salmon, the millions of salmon going up the streams, were actually fertilizing the forests. So there you have, in the grand scheme of nature, a big scale experiment, which we're bringing back into the farmstead, the homestead. Could you do this in your backyard even?
Oh, absolutely. And isn't it wonderful how we can look to nature and use biomimicry to actually create natural solutions based on what's already happening out there? You know, Mother Nature can teach us a lot. So people are growing in their backyards. Generally, if you don't have a year-round growing climate, you might want to put a greenhouse structure of some sort over it. Aquaponics is a year-round activity. You can't really shut it down like your dirt gardens, because you do have the fish there that need a place to live all the time. But there are people that are growing using some cold water fish, trout, for example, or fish that can tolerate fairly cold waters, like a lot of our native fish. You've got catfish and bluegill, fish like that, that can actually, they're not going to eat anything, but they'll certainly survive colder water. But it's a lot more fun to be able to grow year-round, and so I recommend a greenhouse for that. But there's also people that are growing indoors. So they're growing in garages and in basements. We've got a guy close to us that has his aquaponics fish tank in his basement, and he's put grow beds in his laundry room, and he pumps the water back and forth through the laundry chute, which I just think is wonderful, because his laundry room is right off his kitchen. So he goes right in there to pick his herbs and produce, and then the fish are kept nice and cool down in the basement.
I've thought about doing that, and I was going to ask you about that. My major concern was, what about the odor? Is it going to be a smell problem if you've got these inside the house?
No. A healthy aquaponic system has no odor at all. Except for perhaps you get this kind of nice spring earth smell from the planting beds. It's really wonderful. But there's no fish smell at all. The smell from fish actually comes from rotting fish flesh. You know, fish itself don't create any odor. And even the solid waste, nice way of saying the poop from the fish, has no odor to it whatsoever. So it's a very odor-free system.
One of the reasons this interests me is I'm mainly a vegetarian myself, but I do like to eat fish. I think it's a good brain food. I think it's a clean food. It doesn't have all the chemicals and the hormones that you find in so much other meat today. And I think it's easy to digest. So it seems to make sense from that point of view. Are you hearing from people who want to get into aquaponics because of that?
Absolutely. And I'm the same way, by the way. There's a term for us. We're called pescatarians. We are fish-eating vegetarians. And there's a lot of people that want to eat that way. They want to avoid meat and chicken and some of the things that come along with that. So, yeah, this is a terrific way to eat. It's completely organic. When you think about it, the fish in an aquaponic system are actually the organic certifying agency, right? I can't be using pesticides in my system because it's going to hurt my fish. And I can't be using hormones and medication and antibiotics on my fish because it would actually hurt my plants. So because I've got to be concerned about both of those entities and frankly the bacteria as well, I have to be very, very careful about anything that I put into my system. And so it forces an organic discipline, which I really like. The other thing is that aquaponics uses very little water. Some say less than 10% of soil gardening, traditional soil-based gardening, because you don't have this seepage in through the ground. All the water in an aquaponic system is recirculated through the system. And unlike hydroponic systems, where you have to actually dump the chemical nutrients that the plants are grown in because it gets out of balance and you've got to sort of reset the system every few weeks, in an aquaponic system, you never, ever do that. You wouldn't get rid of the water, because that's where all my wonderful nutrients and bacteria are. So we use very little water in an aquaponic system, which I think is going to become more and more important as global climate change is occurring. And water, particularly in areas like where I am, I'm in Colorado, and in the Southwest, water is becoming more and more important in what we're doing. It's always been very important, but it's a critical issue now. We're facing more and more drought. And I think that using less water to grow your produce is important.
Absolutely. I've done shows on Colorado and the water system, and also how much fracking is using up of the waters there. That's another whole story. Don't get me going on that rant. It's a real battle there. Now, we talked about the types of fish that you can raise, and one of the most popular further south, at least, is tilapia because they reproduce so quickly. I was wondering, could people use solar power to heat up the water? There's new types of solar power where you can heat water even in the wintertime. They don't have to freeze up. You can keep them going. Have you heard of people experimenting with that, trying to keep their fish warm? What do they have to be, about 80 degrees or something? What's the temperature?
For tilapia or your more tropical fish, and frankly, even some other fish, catfish, bluegill that I had named before, are going to produce the most waste, eat the most, and grow the fastest in your warmer temperatures as well. Really, it doesn't have to be 80s. In the 70s, they're perfectly happy to. During the winter, honestly, I keep my tilapia at about 68. That's where they are when I go in the morning. And what I've discovered is that they'll start eating at 68 degrees. So it's not really as severe as you would think it would be. To your question about using alternative energy to heat the water, absolutely. There's a very strong renewable energy and off-grid and DIY movement within aquaponics that this is, because it's a sustainable technology, we really need to continue along that continuum and get off the grid for our power sources. So people are using geothermal, and they're using heated water flow through heat exchangers, pellet stoves, solar heating components. So it's very much a part of what we do. I actually run a large community site online called the Aquaponic Gardening Community. And every day there's lots of discussions going on about how do we get off grid. So it's very important to what we're doing.
What's that website?
Aquaponicscommunity.com.
Aquaponicscommunity.com.
You can also get to it off of our website, which is theaquaponicsource.com.
Well, I should have told listeners, you're a leader and an organizer in this whole movement. Can you tell us about some of the organizations involved here?
Oh, you bet. And one that I'm particularly proud of is the Aquaponics Association, which was just founded a little over 2 years ago with the very first Aquaponics Association conference. And it's the first time that aquapons, as we refer to ourselves, in North America have ever really gotten together physically. You know, not there's a few different forums out there where people are conversing around the world all the time, which have been very important to the development of aquaponics. But it was really one of the first times that people have physically gotten together. And there's no replacement for just being, you know, face to face with people, just like here at the Mother Earth News Fair. And meeting other leaders and movers and shakers in the industry. So the Aquaponics Association was sort of founded out of that first conference in Orlando, Florida, 2.5 years ago. And now I think it's approaching about 500 members, and its goal is to promote aquaponics around the country.
It's a pretty new field, isn't it? I don't remember hearing about aquaponics in the 70s.
Yeah, it's ironic because it's, when you think about it, I mean, you gave a perfect example with your wife and the salmon. Aquaponics, in some senses, has been around since life on Earth. It's this notion of fish fertilizing the environment around it, especially if you look at flooding and all of that. But man-made aquaponics, you could say the Hanging Gardens of Babylon were man-made aquaponics. But then if you sort of continue the thinking a little bit further and say, well, if aquaponics is a constructed ecosystem created for the purpose of growing fish and plants together, a lot of that research really only started taking place about 30 years ago, which if you look at various disciplines out there, that's pretty recently. And that was advanced a lot by the work of a man named Dr. James Ricosi at the University of the Virgin Islands. Dr. Ricosi was an aquaculture guy who was looking into ways to use plants to filter fish water. You know, waste in a contained aquaculture system is a big problem. So he took on with his studies, how is it that I use this waste for a beneficial purpose? And aquaculturalists had been playing around with different water plants for a while. But what Dr. Ricosi did that was kind of unique was he decided, well, I don't have to grow water hyacinth. Why don't I grow lettuce and tomatoes and okra and start growing food that people can actually eat? And so he advanced that a lot over his 30-year career. And he's given a lot of credit for that, rightfully so. He's recently retired. In the meantime, though, so that was sort of the commercial farming aspect of aquaponics. In the meantime, there was work that was happening more at a grassroots level. A lot of that was in Australia around home and backyard aquaponic gardening. And that was more focused on using gravel and creating growing beds in more simplified systems. What Dr. Ricosi was doing was called deep water culture, raft-based for bigger production. But with these guys in Australia, actually working off of the work of a couple here in Missouri, but they really took this notion, you know, leaps and bounds further along with backyard aquaponics. And a lot of that happened in the early turn of the century, so around 2001 through present time. So the big popularity of aquaponics really started happening in Australia in the beginning of the 2000s, and then it sort of moved to the United States only in about the past 3 or 4 years. If you look at things like, if you've ever seen Google Trends, where you can see how often something is trending, you look at right about around 2009-10, all of a sudden the number of people that were interested in, if you use searching on Google as a proximity for being interested in it, really took off right around that time. And a lot of that had to do with, that's when the community site got started, that's when my book came out. There really hadn't been a book that was widely available on aquaponics to sort of take people through it until that time, and people started talking, and that's when it's really taken off.
And what is the title of your book?
Aquaponic Gardening, a step-by-step guide to growing fish and vegetables together.
Radio EcoShock.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Sylvia Bernstein. We're talking about aquaponics, obviously. You know, I looked through a lot of YouTube videos trying to educate myself about this to see whether I could get involved with it. And I found such a diverse group of people involved. There were people from the deep south with the big drawl, and there were people trying it up in northern basements, as you say. A lot of them seemed to be cutting apart these food containers, I guess you would call them, big plastic crates of some kind, and welding them and making their own tanks. Could you tell us about how you can get started cheap and give it a try?
You bet. And aquaponics really lends itself towards using a lot of recycled materials as well. I think what you're probably describing is called an IBC tote. IBC standing for Intermediate Bulk Container. And those are used for shipping liquids all around the country, the world. And they lend themselves really nicely to aquaponic systems. You can take a whole one and create a 275-gallon fish tank out of it. You can cut it in half and create a couple grow beds out of it. So IBC totes are used a lot. You just have to, I'll caution your listeners, you have to be very careful about what used to be stored in your IBC tote. One of the things we pay a lot of attention to in aquaponics is the pH of the solution. And I had a guy call me once and say that he couldn't get his pH under control. It was always really low. And I started asking him about his system and found out that he was using IBC totes that used to carry battery acid in them. So, you know, that just was never going to be a real good situation. And you're growing your food in it. You're growing animals in it. You want to make sure that it held something that's going to be compatible with that. But IBC totes work great. Blue plastic storage barrels work great. Cut those in half and you've got both sides of a grow bed. People have used bathtubs. Lots of recycled materials can be used. But even if you can't use all of those fish, frankly, with the babies, if you just leave them in the tank, the other fish will consume I'm looking for nice words here, will consume the babies as a snack. I've heard of people that have chickens that have actually fed the tilapia fingerlings to the chickens, and they're great. There are lots of ways, especially in a homesteading environment, that you can utilize these extra babies that you might not want to use.
And I guess you can also, obviously, dry, freeze, do whatever with the fish and keep it for when you're ready to eat it.
Yes, yes. Well, and understand that when you're growing up the fish, some, just like in any animal population, some will be more aggressive than others. They'll get more food. They'll grow more quickly. And so what you'll end up with is, let's say you get 50 male-female tilapia that you're growing in your IBC tote. Over time, what you're going to find is that only some percentage of those are going to be available to be plate size, about 12 inches. And then you pull those out and eat them, and then the next group will grow up. And so they don't all end up ready to eat at the same time. I have found that we have an outdoor system that we start up in the spring, and I've got to either harvest or bring my fish in into the greenhouse at the end of the summer. And I did find 2 years ago that it was easier just to harvest all of them. And we froze them, and they ended up being great. Thanksgiving dinner was when we pulled out a lot of them, so out of the freezer.
We've been talking about fish because they're really fascinating, but there is the whole other side of this, which is the plants that you're growing and how well they do with this system. And I think people have to understand, from what I've seen anyway, that the plant roots are not always in water and they're not always out of water. There's a balance happening there, how the nutrients get to them. And I've seen some fantastic results, people growing with aquaponics. Talk to us about the plant side of it.
You know, I agree 100%, and we get really fantastic results. Because the plants are, as you said, the roots aren't always submerged in water, assuming that you're using a media-based system and not a deep water culture or raft-based system. Because in a deep water culture system, plant roots are in water all the time. But a media-based system is usually done using what's called flood and drain. And so the water floods up the roots, and then it gets drained back down again. And in doing this, you end up having a lot of oxygen in the media environment for the plants. That, combined with getting enough water whenever they want it and the food is abundant, means that the plants don't have to focus a lot of their energy on their root system. When you think about what's happening in soil-based gardening, plants will develop a much more robust root system than they will in an aquaponic system, because they have to, in order to make sure that they get the nutrients and the water and the oxygen that they need. But because our plants in aquaponics don't need to develop quite as extensive of a root system, they can focus their energy on their top growth a lot more quickly. And because of that, we see faster rates of growth. It's just amazing how much growth you'll get out of an aquaponic system. Essentially, a media-based system will, within 3 to 6 months, really develop into essentially all the components of what you'd have in a really good organic soil. I put worms, composting red worms, in there. You've got animal solid waste. You've got lots of microbial life, fungi, and water and oxygen in abundance. And so because of this, we see terrific growth in these systems.
Right. They grow bigger and they grow faster. And I think the faster part is important if people are trying to feed themselves or others from these gardens. If you can cut down the time to where you can get the food, that's a good thing. Wrapping up here, why do you think this is becoming a wave of interest in America, and how big do you think it will get?
I think it's becoming a wave of interest for a few reasons. It has to do with food security and food sovereignty. Food security, very much, because at least a lot of the people that I know, and I'm pretty sure I can bet that most of your audience, we're all very concerned about the source of our food. It feels sometimes like the government is not paying attention with the GMOs, with pesticide use, with just what's happening with big ag, that people want to take more control over their food. And in taking control of their food, then you can withstand a lot. If you know that you always have a great source of organic, healthy food. And the other side of that is the notion of a great source of organic, healthy food. So much of the food that we're eating these days, we don't know the source of. And because of climate change, we can't always be sure about the future. I mean, I'm worried. And so with an aquaponics system, this really lets you set up your own food systems. So I think that's a huge driver in what's happening in aquaponics. But there are some other components to it, too. I think that, frankly, they're fun. You know, it's you've got the very serious side of taking control of your food, but you've also got a system that's it's a lot of fun to design and assemble these systems. I talk in my book about how I walk into my greenhouse in the morning and it's just, it's alive. You've got water flowing all around the greenhouse. The fish are jumping up because they know that I'm the food cart here. And it's just a very alive function. You know, it's very different than my outdoor vegetable gardens. So there's a fun component there. It's a fantastic educational tool. So doing aquaponics with children, if you can imagine, you're not only teaching biology and chemistry, you're teaching the physics of water movement, of bell siphons siphoning off and on. You, if you're growing indoors, you've got the whole grow light thing with light spectrums and that happening. But the most important lesson is the notion of an integrated ecosystem and the fact that in nature, reality is that if you tweak one part of an ecosystem, it's going to have an effect on all the rest of the ecosystem. And boy, when I went to school, I studied agricultural economics at UC Davis. We were taught that in agriculture and in my ag and soil science classes, basically formulas that if you want to increase your crop production by X amount, apply X amount of fertilizer to it. And that's how you increase your crop production. Not once do I remember there ever being a discussion, but here are the consequences of adding X amount of fertilizer and what you're doing to the groundwater and what you're doing to kill the microbial life in the soil. So this notion of consequences and complete ecosystems, I think, is really powerful for our children. And aquaponics teaches that in a very clear, visible way. And so I think all of these things are going to come together and really aquaponics is going to take off because of that.
Do you have a blog or a website you want to tell us about?
I do. I write a blog every couple weeks called the Aquaponic Gardening Blog, but it's also on our website, theaquaponicsource.com. On our website, we have lots of free learning tools in there. We've got a whole FAQ section and some rules of thumb, and the community site is there where people can learn. And then we also have a store side. And on the store, we supply people with both what they need to build a system. We have some complete systems called our Aquabundance system. So if somebody isn't really a DIYer, because not everybody is, but we also have plumbing kits for if you've already got those IBC totes, but you don't really know how to put them together. And then for somebody that really is more of a DIYer, but they're looking for specific parts, bulkheads, uniseals, all that, we carry all that too. And then we've got a side we call running your system. So we can give you materials for taking your pH up and down, for testing. We sell live fish. We sell fish food, seed starting material, organic insect control, all that stuff. So you can find that on our site at theaquaponicsstore.com.
You are a busy person.
Try to stay out of trouble.
It's been great talking with you, Sylvia Bernstein, about aquaponics. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Radio EcoShock will return in 1 minute with more ways to a sustainable world.